Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi and welcome to the podcast. How you doing? I hope you're well. It's been something of a week for me. If you're a Sober Club member, you'll know, because I shared a very long post about the fact that I was lucky enough to go on retreat last week for myself, actually getting to have a bit of self-care. And it's interesting because I had almost cancelled it. I'd literally almost sent a message and said, I'm just too busy. I have got a huge amount going on over these few weeks. And so I had decided I couldn't do it. And then just a little voice in my head said, hold on a minute, you're constantly telling people that self-care is essential. It's not selfish. It's essential. Just go. So I did. And I'm very grateful that I went. It was a wonderful retreat in Derbyshire in the Peak District. And yes, I am looking at the venue, definitely, for doing something with the Sober Club. It was very healing to be in nature. It really was. And then on the morning that I was leaving, my taxi was ordered for the station very early. And I came down the stairs in this retreat, carrying, you know, like a suitcase, three other bags, a cup that I'd had in my room, went flying off the bottom step. Yeah, and of course I was wearing socks on the stairs. I mean, how many times over the years have I nagged my kids not to do that? Ridiculous. I was trying to be quiet because everyone else was sleeping. I literally went flying across the kitchen, much to the shock and surprise of the chef who'd arrived to make everyone breakfast. And there I was kind of apologising, lying there, you know, with my suitcase on top of me, apologising for having startled her. It's funny, isn't it? We're such people pleasers. We apologise for everything. But I thought I was fine. And so I get in the cab and, you know, shake myself down, get some arnica massage oil. Very grateful for that. Get in the cab. And it really wasn't until I got to the railway station that I realised I was quite badly hurt. Absolutely limping and just really badly bruised. And I got onto step one of this kind of flight of stairs up to the platform and realised there was just absolutely no way I was going to make it. And it was awful feeling so unbelievably vulnerable. I mean, those kind of moments make you so compassionate and open-hearted, don't they, for people who, you know, are not mobile. We take this stuff for granted. Anyway, this lovely, kind woman saw the look on my face and came and helped me and carried my bag and called the lift. And I was so grateful. And then I had to get in a cab to go from St Pancras to Euston, which is about a 6-minute walk. I've never done that in my life before. Anyway, moral of the story is, I think that, you know, I'd listened to the message. Go and get some self-care for you as well. Go and recharge your own battery. But I don't think I'd fully heard what the universe was trying to tell me to slow down. I mean, what a clear signal. So I'm literally hobbling around, dragging this kind of poorly foot behind me and noticing all my various bruises. And it just really makes you reassess everything, makes you realise how vulnerable we feel when everything is not working well. So I feel very grateful that usually I do have good mobility, but it really does make you feel compassion for people who don't necessarily have everything working brilliantly. I also couldn't see the goddamn payment thing in the cab very well. I was feeling so stressed, as you can imagine. And the cab driver was so grumpy, just couldn't quite find exactly the right buttons to hit the, you know, to give him a tip. On the gratuity thing. So that didn't play out very well. Anyways, so that was my eventful moment of the week, my being forced to slow down moment, which is interesting because, of course, I really have got the busiest week ever. This is our very last week on Steve Wright in the Afternoon on BBC Radio 2. Most of you know that I have been doing the show for 24 years. 24 years, my goodness. I wouldn't even realise it was that, other than that when I joined the show, I had one baby who was 6 months old. And over the years, I've had three more. So other than that, I, you know, the time's gone so quickly, I never would have realised. And it really is almost embarrassing to call it work, because it's never really been felt like work. It's always been so much fun being on that show. I'm very fortunate to have had all those experiences. And yeah, it's going to be really, really sad. It is the end of an era. It really is. Anyways, I'll write a blog post and share some of the memories and stuff as time goes on. But this week is just mega busy, because also, obviously booked before I knew it was going to be our last week, I also have my sober coach training this weekend. So I'm super busy with that. And I'm launching a new online group coaching program. And that's really interesting, because when I had my little trip and got that really big lesson, if you like, about self-care, it made me realize these things always happen when I'm just about to launch something, where I'm kind of pointing a finger at everyone else, as it were. And obviously, I have to remember to point them back at myself. The new course that I'm launching for Sober October is called Tapping into Freedom, Secrets to Sustainable Sobriety. And it's all about, you know, health and well-being. It's all about self-care. It's all about becoming your own coach. So teaching you skills and tips and tools to self-coach, so that you can remain on that kind of you have that kind of equilibrium. You can learn to self-regulate so that things are not so up and down, so that you're not constantly going back on your own decisions. So obviously I'm linking it with the emotional freedom technique work that I do. That's why I'm calling it Tapping into Freedom, a little bit of a play on words there. So there will be some EFT, we'll do some of that, and lots of other tools and tips and techniques that you can use to just introduce little rituals, little pieces of self-care, little tips, techniques, taken from all my many years of training in all kinds of modalities. So anyways, if you are interested in that course, just go to thesoberclub.com. It'll be there under events, or there on the kind of news screen, and love to have you as part of that. It's a group coaching program, which the actual first session starts the 12th of October. But the first week we'll jack up a WhatsApp group, and there's a course, an online course as part of it as well. Anyways, Tapping into Freedom, Secrets to Sustainable Sobriety, that's the online group coaching. Just message me if you want more info. The point I'm making is, I think it always happens that way. I remember hearing David Hamilton talking about how when he was commissioned and he was in the process of writing his book about self-love, it's called I Heart Me. It's a really great book. He suddenly had an absolute period where he couldn't write a word. He had a complete writer's block, because he was just thinking, how can I do this? Who am I to do this? I absolutely don't love myself enough. So I think it is a case of literally pointing one finger out and another four need to come back to whatever I'm doing, I think. Anyways, I'm healing. So thank you for your concern. If you are concerned about my foot and all the rest of the bits of me that are not feeling up to speed at the moment. Fortunately, my brand is Imperfect. I'm very grateful for that title, my imperfectly natural work that I do. My guest, you will be very pleased to know, is Sober Dave. I've known Sober Dave now for just over 4 years, I think. And of course, Dave has now become really well known on Instagram for his work as a sober fluencer. Is that the word? An influencer who talks about sober stuff. And he is now the author. His book is out, One for the Road. Enjoy the interview.
Dave, how are you? I haven't chatted to you for ages. How are you doing?
I know. We've haven't crossed paths for a while, no. But I'm doing all right, actually. Thanks. I've had quite a lot going on since we last spoke.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm very excited about your new book. I know exactly how it feels to get your book finally out. We'll talk about that in a bit. Just before we do that, let's just back up a bit, because, you know, amazingly, even though you are prolific, there will be people who don't know much about your story. So let's just back up and talk a little bit about your background, which I know you cover in the book, of course. And just share a little bit about how it all kicked off for you.
Yeah, well, I'm a typical guy in his 50s who grew up in an era that the pub was where we went, really, even when we were at school, because we didn't need ID. You could get served pretty much wherever you went and that. And I kind of created my own persona when I was 14, 15. I was never a fighter, but I was the drinker. You know, I took to it straight away. And I had quite a fun time with alcohol right in the beginning. But gradually from my 20s and 30s, it changed. And I started drinking at home on my own. And my 40s, it really ramped up. And I, to be fair, Janie, I don't really remember my 40s, which is something I talk about in the book. I lost a whole decade of my life because I got stuck into the heavy stuff, vodka. And I ended up drinking a liter a night in the end because I drank to pass out. And then in my 50s, I realized that if I carried on the way I was drinking, that it would be curtains for me. And even the doctor said to me, I'm a walking time bomb, because my blood pressure was shocking. I was massively overweight. My mental health was rock bottom. And I was just on that hamster wheel, as you know, you're going round and round saying Monday mornings, I've got to stop drinking. By 4 o'clock, you're in there buying another bottle.
Were you, seeking help? You know, you mentioned the your 40s where you kind of lost a whole decade. Did you seek any help, or did you sort of rock up to AA?
I didn't think I could do it. And there was part of me that didn't want to do it. But in my 50s, I realized I had to do it, which was a completely different thing. And I think it's when the doctor said to me, you're a walking time bomb, that I started to realize actually how serious it got. And I had a massive rock bottom in 2018 where I kind of did a runner to the South Coast and spent 4 days homeless, basically. It was at Easter and there was nowhere to stay. Everywhere was booked. And I went to Eastbourne and drank myself to oblivion.
What triggered that, Dave? Can I just ask, what do you remember? Why, you know, yeah, you know, it sounds like a daft question, why you went.
I had an argument at home.
Interesting, our responses, isn't it? You know, something, we sort of go right back to our default position.
It was like, you know, in the old sitcoms and that, I'm going down the pub. It was like that. I think it was almost gave me a ticket to go on a bender. You know, it was almost an excuse like that. And I just got in the car and drove. And I've somehow always ended up at the sea because I find the seaside like really comforting and that. But of course, I didn't really see that. I parked up down a side street and went straight into a pub, like 10:30 in the morning, drank all the way through and then went to the co-op and bought a bottle of vodka and thought it'd be romantic to sit on the beach watching the moon and the waves. But it wasn't quite like that at 3 o'clock in the morning.
No.
And I did that for 4 days on the bounce. Equally, an important thing there, Jane, is that a week before that, I went to the doctors because I was on antidepressants and I said they don't seem to be working, and he doubled my dose.
Oh my God, without asking you about your drinking.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, God, he just, God. I was in there literally 2 minutes.
That scares me. It really scares me.
Yeah.
The fact that you were on antidepressants at all when you were drinking, I mean, that's medication on top of medication, right?
Yeah, it was awful.
Right. So obviously after that, presumably was a bit of a wake up call for you.
It was and it wasn't, because I went back after that to the doctors, and I think she realised what a huge mistake the other doctor had made, because I was in there for an hour, and as you know, the appointments are really, really short. I think, are they 8 minutes or something?
Yeah. 7 to 12 minutes, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And she was brilliant, and she put them back down again. But after 3 or 4 days, I seemed to have forgotten what I'd been through again. And I started like drinking again. And as you know, it doesn't take long before you're back to the full flow of it. And you're almost like laugh about the experience to your mates. And but shortly after that, I was doing a counselling course, and I failed all my exams because I was just on this bender. But then my mum became ill and she died. And that just ramped up people more. I was like on an absolute mission then.
Yeah.
So I saw 2018 out. It really upsets me, Janie,
to think back. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
It was awful.
Yeah.
And then January came and a friend sort of suggested to me that we do 3 months together. And I've said before in this podcast, I kind of laugh because I didn't believe I could do 3 days, but something was right about it. And I think it was all the subliminal thinking that had been going on previous to that of, I know I've got to do something about it, but I don't know how, I don't know when or whatever. And I think it all came together at the right time.
Yeah.
And that evening on the 7th of January 2019, I went to see him and shook his hand straight away. And that was the last time. And I sometimes often wonder what my last drink was because I don't remember.
Yeah. Interesting.
It's an odd feeling.
Yeah. I know you talk in the book about you talk a bit, you know, about your childhood and, you know, not the easiest childhood at all. I mean, I know you and I have had this conversation before, but I now do a lot of work around family constellations, and I do find it just so fascinating to sort of look back at some of that early trauma, as it were, you know, and just see what we made it mean as an adult, you know. Do you think that when you were, you know, in the midst of all of your drinking, do you think you ever had any kind of concept of, you know, I don't know, just being able to take care of yourself, to love yourself, to not sound too woo-woo? Did that ever cross your mind?
There was a lot of blame, Janie. There was a lot of finger pointing from myself at what had happened. And I didn't really delve into it. I just used to block it out all the time.
Yeah.
But I think it was when my mum was really ill and I spent the last 2 days with her. She had a hospital bed in her flat.
Yeah.
And it came over me that I needed to forgive her, because if people don't know listening, that she left the family home when I was 14.
Right.
And left a letter for me. There was no goodbye or anything like that, you know. And I didn't see or speak to her for a year. And I felt really rejected. And then I got in the wrong crowd. It says that in the book, you know, I chose a crowd that would accept me as the drinker, not the fighter. But it almost like there was a huge sense of forgiveness. And I held her hand and I said to her, "Mum, I love you. And you're the best mum I could have hoped for." Because what it taught me was incredible resilience and ability to survive. You know, I did from an early age. I had to cook, do ironing, do all sorts of things, you know.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for that. And now I'm older, I realize that these things happen in relationships and they break down. But as a kid, you never look at it
no,
like that.
No, of course not. That's so interesting, though, because, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, in constellations, one phrase we say a lot is, you know, despite how bad, in inverted commas, it was, you know, you did get enough to survive. You got enough to be you. And when we can sort of own that, it really helps, because we got enough. You got enough to be you, and look at the magic you're creating now. You know, but it's very tough, isn't it, when people are really stuck in that frame of mind where everything feels so hopeless, so completely hopeless. And as you say, you weren't even searching for help. You were just being given antidepressants on top of booze.
Yeah, and it was a terrible cocktail as well, because my anxiety was sky high because of the amount I was drinking. But equally, I worked for myself and I was a proper functioning alcoholic, you know.
Yeah.
I struggle with that word, by the way.
Yeah, me too.
I think it's easier. People understand it more. But You know, I used to have to run my business, and it was almost like I did it remote control. You know,
it was
I went through the motions, and I had my little techniques. Like, for instance, if I went in someone's house, I would move my head away so hopefully they wouldn't smell alcohol on my breath. Or if they offered me a cup of tea and I was upstairs, I'd say, I'll leave it on the stairs so I wouldn't have to come down and face them. All these little things that we do in our lives when we're drinking to avoid the confrontation of being found out.
Yeah, we think we're getting away with it, don't we?
Yeah, and a lot of the time we're not. But it was when I stopped drinking, I realised, it's incredible how quickly these symptoms go, like anxiety and that horrible, horrible feeling on a Monday morning when you wake up and you think, oh no, oh my God. And then you check your phone and you think, oh, did I fall out last night with anyone? And oh my God, what have I got ahead today? It's terrible. And when you realize that you haven't got that straight away and you think, well, actually, I didn't drink last night. I knew where I was. I didn't have an argument. I didn't sleep the best, but the amount of benefits you get is so refreshing, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So when you did finally make that decision, you know, albeit kind of pushed into it almost, what do you remember about that time? I know you came along to one of my events. You were all fragile.
Yeah,
it was lovely to see you. But you were only a few weeks in, weren't you?
I always talk about that event and what you held there, because I tried AA, and at first that really worked for me because I have a soft spot for churches, you know, the ambiance of it as you walk in. And I think that's what drew me in. Mm. But after 2, 3, 4 meetings, people were saying the same thing. There were people there that had been sober for 30 years and were saying, you know, but that's fine because it works for them, obviously. But for me, it was like, it didn't quite fit with me. It didn't align with what I wanted, really. There was a time that I left there and I thought, you know what, I just don't want to go back to this. It feels a bit depressing for me.
Then
I saw your event online, and when I arrived at your event and went in eventually, it changed my whole life because I met you, Rock Sober Boys, Claire Pooley, William Poulter. And I remember being on the train on the way home thinking, God, these are normal people.
Normal people. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this is a positive approach to sobriety.
Absolutely
yeah,
positive. And it gave me such a buzz. I felt literally on cloud nine that it gave me a real feeling of community spirit, you know, that we're all in it together. We all come from different walks of life and we can all do it. And I remember that feeling. And that's why now I talk about the power of community is so important.
Oh, God, you know? Connection, knowing that other people are going through the same thing or have been through the same thing. Yeah. And that, as you say, that they're normal.
Why shouldn't they be? But when you drink like I did, I was really isolated to, I didn't want to talk about it. And since I've written my book, my dad has said to me, I didn't even know you drank.
Oh, wow. Really?
You know what I mean? That's how much I kept it and hid it. You know, and I think that's quite common because who really goes out in the high street and says, oh, do you know what? I'm drinking 4 bottles of wine a night.
Exactly. Yeah, where people become very secretive, don't they? Very secretive. So when you were in those early weeks then and you were starting to realise, okay, you know, there is this positive approach, there is this whole world out there, I'm guessing, you know, it wasn't all plain sailing. You must have had a few mates who made it difficult for you. How did you kind of cope with the sober shamers if you encountered any?
Well, do you know, the funny thing was that in the last few years of my drinking, I isolated myself quite a bit.
Yeah.
So I didn't have the usual meeting down the pub with the lads to watch the football and they're calling me names because I'm not drinking. And the people that did know me were really supportive. But I did come across a few people along the way, and I realised soon that I was holding a mirror up to them, really.
Of course.
That you never give up drinking. What you mean is you never give up
drinking. Yeah, exactly right. And that lovely question, oh dear, did you have a problem? Well, no, do you?
Yeah. It's really, the further you go, the more you realise that you get the same sort of response from people, you know. So you kind of get broader shoulders and you relax into it. And now, you know, I have a certain amount of empathy for people who,
of course. Yeah.
Who comment like that, because you know, there's a lot of people out there who are silent in this thing and don't know who to turn to. So that's a lot of people go on the attack, don't they?
Yeah, exactly. You know? Exactly. But I just think, you know, it's so great. The more people that are talking, raising awareness of this sort of concept of, you know, you don't have to be at rock bottom before you get off that goddamn booze elevator, you know, life can be better.
We're both good advocates
coaches,
for the grey area drinking.
Yeah,
and that,
exactly.
That now is raising more and more awareness of...
Yeah, it really is.
It's not about the quantity and how often you do it. It's about how it affects your life, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
And I've talked to women that have, you know, a couple of glasses of wine with dinner, but then they feel lethargic. They don't want to do the homework or say goodnight to the kids with a bedtime story and stuff like that. So it's actually... a lot more broad these days, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. It really is. So, I mean, you know, obviously the dynamic is the picture's changing, which is wonderful. You know, the tide is turning. We've both done loads of, events and work around great alcohol-free drinks. There's so much more out there now.
Mm.
What would you say you encounter? I mean, particularly for guys in this space, I'm interested as to whether most guys do struggle with the sort of down the pub thing, or is that a bit of an outdated concept?
No, I don't think it is. I think guys struggle more because, that's an era, an age group thing as well, I think. Most of my clients, most of the people that follow me are women, 86% in fact, but I don't think that's unusual. But the men that follow me are curtain twitchers, so they watch,
exactly.
And they watch and they look at the comments and stuff, and I might get a DM and it might say, you know, look, I'm struggling, don't know what to do. And I also think men go a little bit further because they, for instance, it'd be the denial of it's only a few beers with the lads that weekend or stuff like that, you know. And I'm really working hard to change that narrative, really.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, I'm now 58, right? I gave up when I was 54. And I'll try and make it accessible for men to feel that they can talk about mental health. And
absolutely.
Their drinking.
Because I mean, at one time they didn't at all, did they? I mean, I know it sounds terribly cliche, but it honestly is true. You know, at one time they men, you know, I mean, most of us didn't, but certainly guys, you would never get them discussing mental health. It would just be like, oh, for God's sake, how very American, you know, really. I mean, seriously, that is the truth.
Yeah, it's the truth. And it's almost going back to cavemen days that, you know, men go out and they get the brontosaurus while the woman cleans a cave kind of thing. Do you know what I mean? It's so old, out of date. And that's why I quite often... But when you listen on my podcast, there's a lot of male guests now.
Yeah, there is. Yeah, which is brilliant. Yeah,
you know,
I mean, me too.
Which
I
is interesting.
Yeah, I get a lot of guys too, and it is fantastic. I've interviewed Alex Howard this week, and yeah, there are a lot of guys in this work. A lot of guys have come to it. It's brilliant. It really is great.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. So tell us about the book then, and the idea for the book. I'm guessing it stemmed from the podcast, and you thought, why not do the book too?
Yeah, it all goes hand in hand. But, you know, I mean, the podcast I decided to do almost like overnight. And the first episode went to number 4 in the Apple chart. It was just,
fantastic.
I couldn't believe it, right?
Yeah.
But the book was a whole different thing. I mean, the irony of that was when I was drinking, I used to say, oh, I'll write a book about this one day, the man I know and stuff like that. But from start to finish, it was... really challenging, as you know, writing a book, and there's a million things you have to do, But it opens cans of worms that you didn't even think were there as well.
Yeah, that's very true, actually. That is very true. I was talking about that just today, funnily enough. I was, because I'm putting a course together, which is a kind of online program. And a lot of the stuff in there is based around taking really good care of yourself and sort of regulating your nervous system and, you know, and self-care practices. And it's just been so interesting because one by one, the universe has been showing me that I'm not doing it for myself enough. So it's like, oh my God, as soon as I try and kind of put this content out, I get, you know, it's that point one finger out and you get four coming back at yourself.
I know.
I bet you had that with the book. It's like, oh my God, who am I to write this? A lot of people go through that.
Absolutely. It's like that saying, a car mechanic never services his car. There was a lot in there that I thought, God, where's my self-care? What am I doing? You know?
Yeah.
I mean, I tried to make it a bit of a manual as well as a memoir and motivational as well.
Sure.
I talk about choosing sobriety. I've peppering a bit about my childhood and what took me to drinking, because I think a lot of people find that relatable.
Yeah.
The truth about alcohol, you know, we romanticize about it. You know, someone might say, oh, you know, can have a nice couple of glasses of wine on a Friday night and that. But actually the truth is, no, you can have a bottle and a half and pass out.
Exactly.
The pink cloud hitting walls, you know, the struggles. Of course, grey area drinking. Sarah Drage, she has a whole chapter where growing up as a child of an alcoholic.
That's a very interesting.
That's raised a lot of interest, that chapter, and an important one as well. But also, I talk about relationships because they change as well.
Of course, you know, absolutely.
Like a lot of people meet when they're both drinking, and one stops drinking.
Yeah,
that can cause all sorts of different issues. But also it's important to talk about the partner of someone who does drink, because not many people talk about that, you know. And then one day at a time, which I said to you at the beginning of this before we chatted, I'm treating life like that at the moment. It's some days you get up and you can go to bed feeling great and wake up really down, and you don't know why.
I think it's interesting, isn't it, that you know, we a lot of us have such high expectations of being sober, and we fully expect that certainly after we've done the kind of hard bit, the first, you know, few months or whatever, we fully expect all of life to be perfect. And so if we have a shit day, or, you know, we just feel really down, it's almost like there's something wrong with the sobriety. Yeah. And then we get that fading effect bias come in, like, oh, you know, life would, you know, was great in the past when I could just have a drink. No, it wasn't. It never, ever was. And you always had shit days then as well. It's just that is life.
It's true.
We have to learn to feel the feels, don't we? We have to learn some emotional intelligence, because most of us have very little. We're not taught to sit with our feelings and be okay with our emotions. We really aren't.
But it's interesting what you say there as well, is because I find a lot of people, when they get sober, they blame their sobriety if there's something that's not going quite right.
Exactly.
As if it would be better. But it's life as well. It's like, you know, try and remember when you were drinking and the amount of times life was hell.
Exactly.
And the romanticizing is like, if you remember a relationship from the past where you've left it for a reason, and a month later you remember the good bits and not the bad, and you go back. And as soon as you've gone back, you realize why you left in the first place. You know, and that's what a lot of people do with booze. They give it up, go a month or so, and then think, oh, I can have a couple because I miss it. And after that, they're like, oh my God, I'm back where I am.
Yeah.
So it's important to try and remember those times and just keep plowing through, you know, because it's never linear, is it?
No, exactly. I think that's it. I think really noticing is the key, isn't it? Really noticing what's going on. Yeah, absolutely. So it sounds like you've got a whole bunch of stuff in the book. And I hear your launch didn't quite go the way it's planned. It's one of those things that we call Sod's Law, isn't it? The timing was not ideal for you.
Yeah, I couldn't believe it, because I had a book launch live-a-thon arranged and whatever. And someone messaged me on the Thursday and said, you know, the Queen's died, and which was awful news, absolutely awful. But being absolutely honest, I was like, I can't believe it. you know, I had to postpone everything and stuff, yeah. But everything's meant for a reason. And, you know, these things happen. And I mean, on a side note, I thought the Queen's funeral was one of the most incredible things I've ever seen. Mm. You know, I watched it with my dad, who's 92.
Oh, wow.
And we just sat there and I made him lunch and that. And it was a real special day, you know, to sit with him. And he's not exactly a royalist, but I think he really enjoyed it, that because he's just lost his partner as well. Mm. So it was us coming together and I gave him a signed copy of the book and whatever. And it was a lovely, lovely day.
Yeah.
And it's just one of those things. And you know, it's long content, isn't it? As you know, it's always out there like the podcast. So it was just an unfortunate thing.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think. Yeah. I mean, years ago, you know, when I wrote several books on holistic living, you know, years ago, and with various publishers that I would work with. You know, it would be a case of, well, if your book doesn't sell, you know, within the first 3 weeks, don't even bother phoning up the publisher because, you know, we ain't interested. I mean, it really was like that. I had a deal with Orion and, I mean, literally all kinds of things went wrong and the book didn't kind of chart within the first 3 weeks. And that was it. I was out on my ear. But then I worked with Hay House publisher and it's completely different. I mean, completely different. And they're in for the long haul. I mean, who cares if it takes 2 years to sell? It doesn't matter. You know, it's all the amazing people that you'll reach now that so much more is done online rather than just in bookshops. So, yeah, I mean, ultimately it's frustrating, but I don't think you need to worry.
It's brutal though, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, the whole process.
It's like having a baby. It really is. I mean, you literally bear your soul and you know, go through this process. And if nobody kind of wants to buy it, you're heartbroken.
As you say about you bear your soul, you invest 2-3 years into it and it goes out. And I can understand now people who write plays and stuff like that and they get reviews in the press,
they're never read their own reviews. I've seen a lot of actors say that. You can understand why, can't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But well done you. It's you know, it's such an achievement and thank you. I think the more of these books are out there, the better. I mean, really, I think it's just great. The more awareness we can raise I think we all resonate with different people and different stories and you know, there'll be guys who read your book. I mean, well, everyone reads your book, but there'll be some people read your book and you literally bit by bit will practically be, oh my God, that's my life. You know, that was my background. I grew up in an area like that. I grew up, you know, I went through that I lost a decade. And it's so powerful that we can, you know, connect and share these stories because, you know, it's one thing hearing, I don't know, Go Sober for October campaign tell us, why don't you pop a bit of money in a tin and reduce your drinking. Well, you know, how is that going to change anything? What you really want is to be inspired by someone who's been there, done it, got the t-shirt, and life is better, you know?
Absolutely. And with these kind of books as well, there's always something, isn't there? There's a nugget of something.
Exactly. A little light bulb
in
moment.
There. Yeah. So that's really important. And I think these days, the more we get out there to support people, the better it is. And, you know, I think things are definitely changing since we met, you know, four years ago.
Yeah.
Things have dramatically changed. And there's so many different things now that people can, there's on like your groups you have and books, podcasts, there's so many different things. So I think it's brilliant.
It is. It is great. I met someone a few weeks ago and she'd literally been kind of Googling around. In fact, I'm not even sure if maybe she was just on Instagram or something. And up until that point, she'd only ever done like conventional kind of rehab and AA and absolutely nothing had worked for her. And she came across my one of my Sober by the Sea events and literally just kind of took the plunge and thought, oh God, I'll just do it. And you know, it was just so unbelievable. I mean, how brave of her, bless her, but so unbelievable because her world opened up to a whole new world that she'd never come across. And that's what's exciting, isn't it? Like you, when you first came down to the self-care and sobriety, like, oh my God, there's a whole world of people who are normal.
Yeah, it's true. And it's you know, it changes not just the person, but it has a ripple effect to the people around them as well.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
and the amount of families that message me and say, you know, you spoke to my husband 2 years ago and he hasn't had a drink since and everything has changed. And, you know, that kind of thing that you don't even know it's going on.
Yeah,
behind the scenes, but you get a message like that and it's just incredible. It just has a ripple effect.
The ripple effect's amazing. Definitely. So anyway, we should just give the details about the book. Tell us where people can get it.
Well, it's called off the back of my podcast, it's called One for the Road, and it's now available on Amazon Prime all over the world, really.
Cool. Fantastic. Well, it's great to chat to you, Dave. Really, really lovely to see you doing well, and very, very proud of you getting your book out. That's great.
Thank you, Jane. I really appreciate you asking me on. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It'd be lovely to see you.
Yeah, it'd be great. Let's do something soon. Take care, Dave.
All right, Janie.
Really appreciate
Thanks.
It. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you, Dave. We'll put that link in the show notes. Don't forget then, we have the new online group coaching program. This is for you if you don't necessarily want one-to-one coaching right at this point, but you would like some support making sobriety stick. So maybe you're sober curious, or you're thinking about it, or maybe you've been around that block a few times. Maybe you're on week 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 2 months in, and you're just thinking, how can I make this a little easier for myself? What are the secrets to sustainable sobriety? And that's what we're gonna give you, their tips and their tools for self-care, for regulating. There's going to be some good stuff shared there. And of course, based around some emotional freedom technique stuff as well. So you learn some really cool skills that you can use for anything, actually. And then following on from that course, I'll be doing one for people who've been sober for a while, more about self-care in sobriety moving forward, and living your best life without the booze, really. It's ultimately what we all want, isn't it? So DM me if you want any more information, or just go to thesoberclub.com, click on events, you'll find information there. And we also have a Champneys retreat coming up in November. Not sure at the moment whether it's the first weekend or the second weekend, so message me for more information. That will be sorted out very soon, I'm hoping. And don't forget, if you are looking for support and you're looking for connection, it's all there at the Sober Club. You can always message me, even if you're not a member of the Sober Club, just drop me a message and tell me that you're doing this thing, that you're going to give it a go. I think it's really important to tell someone. It really is. And I'll reply if I can. And just always reach out. And if you're struggling, reach out as well. The people do have a tendency to just retreat within and think, oh, nobody else is as bad as me. Nobody else has been through what I'm going through. I'm not going to share it. And it's absolutely not the case. When you bring things out into the open, they're much more easily able to be healed. And also it makes things seem a lot less awful, really, when you share them, particularly if people then go, oh, wow, well, that was me too. I felt exactly the same way. You really aren't on your own. So drop me a message if you're just starting out. Always reach out if you've got anything going on. Don't hole up. It really is the worst thing. Power of connection, remember. It's super, super important. So you know where I am. You know where to find me, at Janie Lee Grace. Some of you might hear our last show on Radio 2. Thank you to any of you who are Radio 2 listeners who've been listening to the show for the last 24 years, or part of them. It's much appreciated. It's a very odd week for me. Very odd. I can tell you, it really is the end of an era. I'll reveal more about other bits and pieces that are coming up in due course. Have yourself a fantastic week, and make sure you stay committed to your choice, if it's your choice to be sober. Don't let anyone else rain on your parade. A couple of people in the Sober Club have been telling me that, you know, they've got kind of mean friends. I'm sure they don't mean to be mean, but friends who just say, oh, you'll be no fun now. You're not drinking. I'm not that crazy about going away with you this weekend. I know we planned it, but you're going to be no fun if you're not drinking. The reverse is true, actually. It really is drunk people who are boring. It really is. There is nothing glamorous about drinking. The emperor's not wearing any clothes at all. Just listen to your heart, listen to your soul, and then you will absolutely know what the right thing to do is. If you've got any suggestions for guests for me for the podcast, always open to know who you'd like me to interview. Drop me a message. If you can connect me with some amazing people, even better.
And thank you for listening. I don't know if I say that often enough. I'm really grateful. Thank you for listening to this podcast. And for those of you who drop me messages and write nice reviews and rate it and review it and all of that stuff. Really, it's so much appreciated. See you next week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.